This is an AI-generated summary of Hansard for Wednesday, 29th May, 1901. The House of Representatives. Patrick Glynn inquired if the Judiciary Bill would be introduced in the House. Alfred Deakin, representing the Protectionist Party, stated that notice must be given for any question and that questions were not being answered during the address in reply debate. He offered to provide the information privately. The debate then resumed from May 23rd on the Governor-General's speech. Frederick P.S., representing Tasmania, acknowledged the courtesy of the adjournment and spoke for two reasons: to address a challenge to his personal position and to present facts about Tasmania's financial status. He stressed the importance of establishing effective machinery for federal government departments, sympathised with Western Australia's railway hopes, and urged early attention to the Northern Territory issue. While acknowledging some free trade arguments, he questioned certain counter-arguments and disagreed with the Leader of the Opposition about Tasmanian representation in the federal ministry. Emphasising being an Australian first, he supported the current administration's foundational work. At one point, William Wilkes interjected with the remark, "Fail trial, speedy dispatch." P.S. then discussed the tariff. He argued that while the tariff was crucial for some states, for others, it would merely serve as a revenue source. He hoped to secure his objectives from a semi-independent position by supporting the federal administration while reserving the right to differ. Emphasizing the importance of revenue for the state's financial stability, he quoted the Prime Minister's statement about a reasonable return of revenue to the states, and referenced the Defense Minister's comment that no state can manage with less revenue. At one point, Deakin interjected regarding a better proposal, and PSA accepted the correction. When asked about a uniform tariff affecting New South Wales and Victoria, PS stated that New South Wales would receive a much larger share than its present customs revenue, predicting an excess of 763,200 for New South Wales and 46,000 for Victoria, whereas Queensland, South Australia, Western Australia, and Tasmania would face shortfalls of 13,000, 55,000, 45,700, and 164,000, respectively. He recalled that Tasmania had prospered during years when free intercourse between the states prevailed. Deakin interjected several times, questioning figures and proposals, including the average rate for customs and matters of excise. PS maintained that although Tasmania had shown a good surplus over recent years, it would still struggle under a uniform tariff. He noted that on a tariff bearing equally on all, Tasmania could produce one-third less revenue compared to other states. After further discussion on historical customs revenues and steady falls in receipts, PS called for the preparation of returns and suggested that special consideration should be given to Tasmania because of its lower average expenditure on education and other local taxation issues. He proposed alternative means for revenue, including land and income tax. Glynn questioned if the necessities of the state should determine the measure of Commonwealth taxation, while PS argued that the Chamber had the responsibility to impose the largest amount of customs. He acknowledged that even a difficult financial position, lasting only 5 years, could be very challenging for many states. Deakin interjected again, prompting PS to express hope that the Treasurer would take part in the discussion. PS quoted the Governor-General's remarks related to the state's financial exigencies, noting, for instance, that no state should be allowed to fall behind. PS also addressed the issue of surrendered powers and the ability to raise sufficient taxation, affirming his proposal that the Commonwealth should take over the state's liabilities. Glynn suggested subsidising Tasmania, and PS agreed that the financial conditions should be faced head-on. Deakin added that some of the state's assets should also be transferred to the Commonwealth. Alexander Poynton, representing South Australia, expressed regret over what he termed state jealousy. He noted that although New South Wales had squandered money from Crown lands, it was not clear that other states, including Victoria, were in a better position. Poynton was particularly astonished at suggestions that there was no necessity to appoint an interstate commission. Vaben Solomon and Alan McLean interjected regarding the court's powers, and issues such as railway tariffs and differences in rates were raised as factors undermining intercolonial free trade. Thomas Kennedy and Deakin also engaged in the discussion regarding the need for an interstate commission and other financial adjustments. Further into the debate, issues such as uniform duties, public service irregularities, and the exclusion of Asiatics were raised. The topic of conciliation and arbitration was briefly touched upon, with members expressing hope that any measure introduced would be compulsory if it were to be effective. John Forrest and Charles Kingston debated whether such measures should be imposed regionally, while Poynton inquired about the proper franchise for these decisions. The debate then shifted to the transcontinental railway. Poynton cautioned members not to rush into pledges against the proposal. Drawing on recent expert discussions, he noted that a proposed penny postage rate for the railway could result in a first-year loss of approximately 315,000, though Deakin pointed out that the loss might be confined to the first year. Poynton emphasized the need for economy and questioned ministerial salaries, before concluding his remarks by discussing the interests of primary producers, secondary producers, and consumers. He asked whether a course of action could benefit one without injuring the others. John Quick, representing Bendigo, then expressed honour at being a member of the House and joined others in hoping that the deliberations would promote the interests of the continent. He argued against any abandonment of protection, summarizing points related to revenue and manufacturing. Quick questioned remarks that appeared inconsistent with the policy of the Minister of Customs and famously contrasted the term crippled and derelict with statistics on employment and plant value within Victoria and New South Wales. He also referenced a statement by Lord Rosebery regarding uncompromising warfare in trade matters and reiterated support for what was known as compulsory arbitration. Quick contended that protection was necessary to balance revenues, wages, and industrial growth. Arthur Smith, representing Parks, congratulated the House on the spirit of unity among members representing states with conflicting interests. He remarked that it was a splendid augury for the future of Parliament that so many capable and representative men had come together to discuss these great issues with little heat or ill feeling. Smith also expressed regret about the composition of the ministry and its representation of the Commonwealth's great interests. Other members, including Macmillan, Deakin, and Charles Kingston, engaged in the debate by discussing specifics of free trade versus protection, matters of revenue, and even issues like ministerial salaries and railway commissioners. In his closing remarks, several members, among them James Cook, representing Bourke, voiced their concerns about the economic conditions affecting their states. Statistics on bankrupts, institutions, and metropolitan populations were cited. Quick and Cook exchanged views on the broader economic implications, with debates touching on manufacturing statistics, wage earnings for industrial workers, and the responsibilities shared between the Commonwealth and the states. Throughout the debate, members emphasized the need for measures that balanced intercolonial free trade with protection, fiscal responsibility with developmental incentives, and regional interests with the overarching stability of the Commonwealth. Notable throughout the proceedings was the quotation of the Prime Minister's statement about a reasonable return of revenue to the states, and Arthur Smith's praise for the unity and respectful spirit that had prevailed despite the distinct and sometimes conflicting interests of various states. Members ultimately expressed hope that their deliberations would result in policies fair to all and conducive to the future welfare and unity of the continent. The Senate. The address in reply debate focused on the Governor-General's speech. Senator Edward Pulsford of New South Wales criticised the speech for confusing statements regarding the tariff. He quoted the Prime Minister's earlier assurances of fiscal policy freedom and contrasted them with the later Maitland speech. He accused the government of lacking backbone on the issue and pandering to vested industries in Victoria. He distinguished between a revenue tariff and what he termed a plunder tariff that benefits private manufacturers. Senator Thomas Playford and Senator Gregor McGregor interjected. Pulsford retorted that Senator McGregor had an all-consuming thirst for information. He quoted extensively from historical figures and publications to define free trade as simply the absence of protective duties. Focusing on the sugar industry and its connection to the Kanaka labor issue, Pulsford argued that past peak production had rendered protection unnecessary and likely to create a cartel. He reiterated that free trade was based on treating others as one would wish to be treated. Senator Playford countered by noting that statesmen of Great Britain had reservations about free trade, to which Pulsford replied by citing Great Britain's success as a free trade nation and its global benefits. When Senator James Stewart remarked that if they wanted wool, they had to purchase it elsewhere, Pulsford pointed out that countries such as Germany and France admitted Australian wool duty-free. He criticized the preferential treatment within the empire and urged the government to introduce the tariff promptly, warning of Senate action if it did not. Discussing interstate free trade, Pulsford pushed for similar freedom of trade with the rest of the world. Protectionist views were raised by Senator Robert Best, who claimed that protectionists agreed on free trade between states. Senator Playford of South Australia observed that although he started as a free trader, experience led him to adopt protectionism. He recalled introducing a tariff in South Australia in 1887 and criticized the lack of a provision for conferences between the houses to resolve disagreements. Senator O'Connor interjected that power must be inherent. Addressing issues beyond tariffs, Senator Playford noted the Northern Territory's financial burden on South Australia and mentioned an offer from a syndicate to form a chartered company. He advocated for a transcontinental railway following a direct route to Kalgoorlie, argued against Commonwealth-run old-age pensions in favour of state-level administration with federal subsidies, and criticised proposals for penny postage due to potential revenue losses. Senator Dobson expressed hope that alterations would be made as occasion required. Senator Playford then critiqued the ministry's plans for salaries, suggesting that they improperly supplemented their pay with parliamentary allowances, a claim which Senator O'Connor dismissed as untrue. Playford concluded by advocating for governmental economy, including questioning the necessity of a chairman of committees. Senator Edward Harney of Western Australia described the speech as couched in language so elastic that it could cover anything needed to maintain a majority. He criticized the absence of a defined policy and called for caution regarding alien immigration. When Senator Gregor McGregor remarked that Harney wanted something to fight about, Harney continued by raising concerns about the proposed Australian High Court. He argued that adding it to existing appeal options could disadvantage poorer litigants, and suggested that the court be composed of 5 judges with appropriate salaries. Harney also critiqued the speech on the Transcontinental Railway, interpreting the government's examinations as focused on profitability rather than the national need to connect Western Australia with the rest of Australia. He defined free trade as the absence of any protective duties, stating that he could conceive of a very substantial revenue tariff that still met that definition, and contrasted this with protectionism, which benefited specific groups. When Senator Dawson asked about allowing laymen to practice in the law courts, Harney replied in the negative. He criticized the protection of ailing industries, such as the woolen industry, and discussed the Senate's powers as a representative of the states, even comparing it to the Roman Senate. Senator McGregor questioned this comparison, while Senator Playford noted that there was only one house in that instance. Senator Dawson remarked that the Senate's powers were smaller. Harney argued against the Constitution's provision for a double dissolution for the House of Representatives without a similar recourse for the Senate, urging a fair and deliberate trial of the Constitution. Senator John Ferguson from Queensland described himself as a moderate protectionist, or a revenue tariffist, he favoured the idea of Queensland forming three states and stated that an auditor's certificate on a bank's balance sheet sufficed as a true and correct statement of affairs. Ferguson also noted that no law was necessary regarding Kanakas, as they were becoming scarcer, and he mentioned the Interstate Commission. Senator Barrett from Victoria discussed an amendment and made it clear that he intended to support the government as long as it introduced measures for the welfare of all Australia. He reminded his colleagues that in two states of Australia, adult suffrage was in place, and according to the powers granted by the Constitution, the superior voting power of those states could not be taken away, leaving only one course of action. Interjections followed, with Senator McGregor and Senator Zeal exchanging brief remarks, and Senator Dawson questioning the plunder tariff that had been mentioned. Harney expressed concern about individuals with no claim deriving income from outside sources. Senators Dawson and Best also interjected in the discussion. Senator Barrett brought up the matter of compulsory arbitration in New Zealand, to which Senator Frederick Sargood commented on conciliation. Finally, Senator Stiles from Victoria added that he was sympathetic to all sides of the argument, a point on which Senators Higgs and Dawson also interjected before Senator Stiles concluded his commentary. This has been a LaunchLab production. LaunchLab.com.au